We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics. Joining me today is Adam Lundin, CEO of Jose Maria Resources. Thanks for joining me today, Adam.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks a lot for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Excellent to have you. So you're now the third generation of a natural resource family. So tell us a bit about the Lundin Group and your family's story for those that might not be familiar with it, please.
Yeah, definitely. A privilege to be born into the family. I think I have a good work ethic, and that was derived from my grandfather who started it. He was always on his, you know, relentless pursuit of getting into the natural resource business. It was mining and oil and gas. And then my father and uncle got into the business as well. And it's been, Lundin Group's been around for 50 years. We call it the Lundin Group, but it's not an entity. It's more, we call it the umbrella. There's 14 publicly traded companies today under the group. And what does it mean to be a Lundin Group company? You normally have the family as most likely the largest shareholder, and then a few, professionals who may overlap on some of the boards, but we all share the same vision of maximizing shareholder returns and doing what's best for all stakeholders and host nations. But yeah, I guess that's a quick overview of the group.
So when you say, let's say maximizing shareholder value, what does that mean to you, Adam? And how do you go about thinking about that framework in your company? Do you try and minimize dilution? Like, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think maximizing, and what is different is with the family view, mining business, it's a long-term game. So, it's hard. There's no such things. I really see short wins in the mining business. So we have a long-term strategy. And I think you have to have that strategy and vision when you go into a project. I think, when you maximize stakeholder returns, I think an easy, company to point to is my brother Jack is running Bluestone Resources. When he got involved in that, you were looking at an underground mine. And yeah, it was attractive. It was a high-grade ore body. But when you take a look at maybe a different lens and what's best, okay, you can make that open pit. You can pull three times the gold out of it. You can, increase the production profile by three times. And also, what's that going to mean for the host nation? That's going to be more jobs and more tax dollars to the country, so that benefits them as well. I think that's, a simple one example to give of doing what's best for stakeholders and shareholders and maximizing value. Yeah, do some people get upset saying, oh, well, you could have been in construction or production a year or two earlier if you just maintained on the underground development. Yeah, okay, but you've been giving up so much to do that. And that's where it comes in, where mining is a long-term business, and do what's best. And sometimes maybe it takes a little longer, but you're going to get the best outcome.
Interesting. So, Adam, you have four brothers, correct? Or three
brothers? Yeah, three brothers. Yeah. Yeah.
A total of four of you. So are all of you also now in the mining business?
So we're kind of split. My brother Will is Chief Operating Officer of International Petroleum Corp, based in Geneva. He just recently moved from Calgary, where he was at the operations there, and then moved to Geneva to the headquarters. My oldest brother Harry is running a natural resource fund called Brome Asset Management. And my younger brother, the third, I'm number two. Number three is Jack at Bluestone.
Excellent. So, Adam, do you feel that you're operating under the shadow ever of what a successful entrepreneur your father was? Or do you feel that you're able to draw on a great resource of knowledge and experience that your family has?
Yeah, Tom, I think that's a good question. We get it. Obviously, you get it every once in a while. Like, do you feel pressure, given third generation of a successful family business? And I haven't felt that pressure yet. Maybe it's going to come, but I feel with all the great people, what makes the group great and what makes the companies great is the people in the business. And to come up in the business, to be surrounded by so many great people that we're all pulling the same rope and we're all wanting to achieve the same goal, again, of good shareholder returns and what's best for all stakeholders. And everyone sharing the same vision, and having so much support around me, I haven't felt the pressure yet. I want to succeed. I want to, you know, obviously create a lot of wins, create a lot of shareholder returns, and that will come in time. But I'm super hungry and don't feel the pressure because there's great people around me that I can lean on.
Excellent. So Goldman has recently said that copper is the new oil. So how are you positioning yourselves to bring more of this, basically the new oil to the market?
I think, you know, we've been bullish on copper. We've seen this trend for a while. We're very active on the oil business as well. And I think, you know, oil will fade over time, but there's going to be a long tail where oil is going to be very important. You know, the one thing about oil is the cheaper it gets, the more we use it. And as we want to transition, you know, we thought it made so much sense to go to electric vehicles. You know, the combustion engine is obsolete, but is there enough grid to go electric? Let's see, you're going to have to build that out. And so for the Lundin Group, you know, and the family, we're very well positioned for copper with Lundin Mining, having 5 producing assets and, you know, trading very well and run very well by Marie Ingster. And then I think for the growth of the family, the big focus is on our two projects, which is Jose America Resources, which I'm CEO of, and Filo Mining, which is just 12 kilometers to the south of Jose Maria in Argentina. And so with those two projects, you know, one's defined in feasibility study stage that we want to get, we're getting ready to build. And then Filo, a super exciting exploration program ongoing right now with 5 rigs turning.
So as you're talking about the Jose Maria project and this, you know, this real long-term vision that you have to have in the mining industry, can you give us a rundown of how long that project has been, let's say, taken from drilling stage, exploration stage, to how long it could be till production?
Yeah, I'm just smiling now because me and my dad laugh that, oh, it was, you know, overnight success. But we sold, or I had nothing to do with it at the time, but Veladero deposit, which we discovered, which was an Argentina gold, got sold to Homestake in 99. And with that same geologist, Patricio Jones, we went and staked this ground in Argentina where we're active today. So you're talking about in the 2000s, Jose Maria was discovered 2004, 2005. Filo, you know, right around then as well, and here we are 2021. So 15 years, you know, we got a feasibility study out at Jose. We have a clear game plan and strategy and schedule laid out that will allow us to get into production in this current copper cycle, and that's important. So with the feasibility study done, the permits in hand, we're looking for fiscal stability from Argentina and continue to maintain the schedule of getting into production in the end of 2025. And I think that's super unique. I don't think you're going to find another junior out there that has the ability to get their deposit online this cycle. And then with Filo 12 kilometers to the south that we continue to drill and explore, you know, the big focus on the oxide cap, and now we're drilling off the sulfides. We're super encouraged there that will just, you know, talk, you know, add to the jurisdiction that we're proving out. I start to feel like Jose is looking like an Erzberg, and no one knows what Erzberg is, but everyone knows what Grasberg is. And so you have to have that starter mine to open up the new jurisdiction, and that's what Jose is.
I might be one of the few people that know what Erzberg is, but from a different, let's say, viewpoint than mining. But ESG is always a large part of the company's vision towards being responsible leaders in this space. So how do you think about your role as a mining company to also act responsibly in this respect, Adam?
I think, again, with the you know, family business coming in, maybe you just have a different view on it, but and maybe treat things differently, being a, you know, as we view these, some of these businesses as, or the, very much a touch of family in it, and look at everyone as, you know, extended family members almost. But, you know, we also view ourselves as contractors. And when you're coming into a host nation, you know, you're helping them, you know, benefit off the natural resources they've been endowed with. And so having that view and coming in and having a sense that everyone wants to better themselves, you know, ESG, you know, environmental social governance goes hand in hand with all those things, and making sure you have social license is super, super important. And the environment, you know, we don't want to wreck the environment at all. It's a big focus. I don't know. We've been doing it for such a long time. It's just really caught in the limelight. But it was always involved in the companies. It's always funny. It's not funny, but it's just interesting when I see all these things, you know, start to grab headlines. And it's like, oh, not everyone else was focused on ESG before now, which is what's surprising to me.
Adam, I want to go back to something that you mentioned in your last answer about the copper cycle. How do you view that copper cycle and you know, what kind of timeline does that have on it? Is it, do you see it just growing and continuing to grow as we move towards the electrification of the world here?
Yeah. So we started getting bullish on copper when we started seeing the lack of investment going into the space. And, you know, there were times at Jose when the family was writing big checks to get through pre-feasibility study. And then also there are times at Filo where we're, you know, writing the bulk of the checks on the expiration. And when you looked at that, you know, there's some, if you combine Jose and Phil and you looked at the programs that we were doing, sometimes they're the largest programs going on in South America. And that just didn't feel right. Why are our programs so big? What is everyone else doing? And so we had the view that obviously this is going to catch up with the space, with lack of investment, and lack of expiration, you're going to have a huge, you know, gaping hole that's going to need to be filled, and we'll have our day in the sun. I think the cherry on the cake is the electrical revolution, and especially, you know, electric vehicles, which is helping speed up that, which is getting us into the super cycle, which we're beginning. And I think that cycle, you know, could last five to 8 years because of the long lead time it takes to bring new production online.
Mm-hmm. So if we take Jose Maria project, for example, considering it has reserves of not only copper, but gold and silver as well. As a hypothetical, if you were producing right now, would you be trying to withhold maybe selling gold and silver, considering the outlook for those metal prices versus maybe selling copper, considering it's at near all-time highs right now?
I think, yeah, no, I understand the question. Obviously, if Jose, you'd be producing a con, so I won't be able to hold anything back. Maybe I could have some hedges in place. I definitely look at myself, you know, kind of doing the opposite, selling forward the precious metals. You know, we do about 1 million ounces of silver for 19 years and 230,000 ounces of gold for 19 years. And that's 30% of our revenue. I look at that as a way, you know, my mindset's been so focused on that, on looking at that and seeing if I could do a stream. And I believe I could to bring in the first $1 billion of CapEx. So to think about, I should kind of rewire myself to think about if I'm pausing to sell precious metals because I think the prices are soft compared to the great rally we've had in copper. And I think I'd let everything ride. I'd probably be okay selling today and taking profits on it. I think the commodity prices are very strong across the board. I think gold is very healthy, silver is very healthy, and so is copper. And, you know, perhaps they both have some room to run, but the margins are so great at these prices right now that it'd be hard to hold anything back.
So ideally, what are you guys looking at for, let's say, cost of production through this project?
We're looking at $1.55 copper equivalent per pound.
Oh, excellent. So in that respect, are the precious metals as part of that, just kind of, as you said, the icing on the cake?
Yeah, those are co-products. It's not net a byproduct, which you see sometimes, but that's our co-products. Yeah, no, the precious metal, if we can, you know, finance this project without streaming off any of our metals, be in very good shape when we go into production
Excellent. So considering that many of your projects are in jurisdictions that many have felt as previously very risky, how important is it for you to work with local governments and how do you look at keeping them happy?
I think with local governments, it's very important that you sit down face to face and get a sense of trust and get a sense of what wants to be achieved. I think, you know, you have some host nations and they say, yeah, okay, you can build this mine. And then they expect tomorrow you're in production and taxes are rolling in. But you have to explain the process, the timeline it takes to get to production, and also come up with an appropriate government take. You know, they want to sanction a project, but for them not to see a penny until you're in production is maybe too long. Is there something you can do there to help them see the benefits more than just employing local people and local, you know, sourcing as much procurement locally as you can. But definitely a face-to-face sit down multiple times and getting comfortable. And also it's important to also, you got to understand election timelines as well. You know, are you getting in somewhere where the election's going to change and it's going to shift another way? You got to have your wits about you.
That was also something I was wondering about is how you look at, let's say, that election cycle, that timeline, and how that could possibly affect your projects.
Yeah, I think right first is like, you have to have an ore body, and then you have a location, and then you got to make sure you have the right people who can tackle it, and then you have those two things checked off. You go and check out the host nation and see if, you know, do they want their natural resources in production and helping the country and creating jobs and employment. But when you look at it, yeah, I guess you just come in open-minded and sit down with the mine minister and hopefully get a sit down with the president as well. And just get a sense, are they pro business, or what do they think about mining? Can you have an open dialogue, and is there a level of trust there? I think it just comes down to, I think, pretty basic, you know, coming down and sitting down and meeting eye to eye.
So what are some of the biggest lessons that you've learned when dealing with local governments like this, Adam?
I think big lessons, it's just time, right? You know, you always want things to go quicker, but it takes time. You know, you can never really sit back, right? You're always going to have something. You're going to have to, there's going to be something at the project. There's going to be something with the government. There's going to be something with your commodity price. So you just really have to keep your head on the swivel and continue to progress and never take a step back. There's always going to be something that keeps you busy for sure. And you want to keep all things progressing forward positively.
So, you know, considering that you guys have to work with you know, governments in let's say third world countries quite a bit, how does the Lundin Foundation work as a part of this process? And tell us more about what that is.
It's super helpful having the foundation and Aaron Johnson, who's running that, has done a remarkable job. It's, you know, when you come into a country and you come into the local community, the one nearest your deposit or your mine, and you say, okay, let's do a social program. And you're like, okay, done. Now get on it. It's okay. Well, what is that social program and what does it entail? And the Lending Foundation will help come up with a playbook on what's best. Is there, you know, Lending Gold is the best example. Okay. What can we do to create a sustainable business? Okay. Well, this mine's going to be here for a long time. Other mining companies are popping up in the area. Okay. What's a quick one? Let's do catering. Help set up a local catering business. Make sure the foods are locally sourced. And you got a contract with the mine, there you go. And then, you know, if they can start getting other contracts with other mining companies or even other sectors, they're off to the races. And that's what you've seen at Lending Gold's and Lending Foundation's initiative with when it came to catering. So it's really a playbook to help. And also on when we go and, you know, I recently submitted an environmental social impact assessment. And you do that to San Juan and Argentine standards, which are rigorous, but also you can do it to IFC standards as well. And the Lending Foundation helps, you know, maybe come up with a gap analysis to see if we're missing anything. And we always want to strive to hit, you know, the SIA on the best standards or most rigorous standards available. Maybe it's not necessary for the host nation you're in, but it's good to do. So to help with all that.
Adam, you have a perspective that very, very few people would have. And I want to ask you what some of the biggest differences are between maybe the way you look at running a company versus your father versus your grandfather, and how your approaches differ to running a mining company.
Yeah, I think I know where our approach is the same, you know, and that's really surrounding yourself with obviously intelligent people and empowering people. We, you know, don't like to micromanage at all. And if there's someone better for the job, give them the opportunity and let them run with it. I definitely shared that with my father and grandfather, which was, you know, empowering people, giving people a lot of rope to run with. Maybe where it's different is hard to say. Both, you know, grandfather and dad extremely successful, and hope to be as successful and more in the future. It's hard for me to say. I think, you know, not there yet to say where I'm different. You know, it's tough. I can't answer that one, Tom.
Not a problem. It's just an interesting perspective that you're able to have. But a lot of investors in the space want to see that a company has skin in the game, or especially management has skin in the game. So how does the Lundin family approach trying to find investments, and how do you choose projects to back?
Yeah, we like concentrated bets. All believe that, you know, you're not going to get wealthy off salary. And so, you know, why I think we look at, you know, size matters. You know, you're looking for tier one deposits. You don't worry about where they are. You go see if you can locate a tier one deposit, if you have the chance to bid on it or get it, and then talk to those nations to see how they view it and what do they want to do, and see if, you know, it'll be a good partnership. And then whatever it takes, you get the deposit, you know, whatever it takes. If you can get it, if you have enough capital at the time, and then come up with a game plan of getting that deposit. A, if you need to do further exploration or further resource understanding, or come up with a game plan to get into production. But it normally, like, I was on the board of Fortress Minerals, where it was a Shell in the lending group, and we had about $5 million cash, and we heard Fruta del Norte was for sale. And when you hear about, you know, deposit, I'm using promoter numbers, rounding up here, but you do 10 million ounces by 10 grams a ton. Are you going to have the chance to work on another property like that in your career? I mean, probably not. So let's fly to Ecuador. Let's go and try and get a hang of it, and, you know, come up to agreement with Freeport or with Kinross to buy it. And the company only had $5 million. I remember going around with Ron and my dad trying to raise the money, and it was tough. Gold was getting it on the head. It was the end of 2014, and the week we were trying to close the deal, I think gold was down around $100 an ounce. And so it was not easy. But now here we are in production, looking like the mine can do up to 400,000 ounces a year. And so it's really, you know, it takes so much time to push these projects forward. I think you really want to have an ore body that makes it worth it. Mm-hmm. That helps. That's a long-winded question.
Not a problem. We've had many long-winded answers on this show, but it's always interesting to hear everyone's perspective, Adam. Something you and I were talking about before we hit record here is that, you know, you and I, and kind of there's a couple of other people that we mentioned that are we're considered millennials, right? And we're now some of the younger guys in this space interested in this. Do you think, or how do you think about the unsexiness of mining and gold and silver, copper, you know, resources like this to our generation? And what do you think could take to get more of an interest from our generation into the minerals?
I think, you know, where we are today and kind of the world being more open-minded, I think that's going to play a big role into getting the younger generation or people our age or younger or growing up into the mining business. I think people are more open-minded, and I think that's going to help, because in the past you'd say mining and you think, oh, you're dirty or you're a villain, but, you know, the natural resources that are produced make everything possible. And so, you know, a lot of guys wanting to go into tech and all those things, but the instruments or tools you have, if you're curious about where they came from, you should be curious about the mining business. And also people who just think, oh, you're just tearing up the ground. I think, you know, with people being more open, if they just give them an opportunity to come and see what we do at the group, I think we could, you know, get a lot of young people interested. And also my brother Jack's very involved, but also helping the educational process. You know, he's big at the University of Arizona. We currently donated money to help build out new mining facilities. I think a lot of that is also extremely outdated and very boring. And if you look in the mining, you don't have many mining departments at universities, but if you go and look at them, maybe they're the oldest departments on the campus, where you got to make it entertaining, you got to make it attractive and grab your audience. But I think we're going to have a lot of young people coming back into the mining business.
Excellent. Yeah, it's hopefully something we can look forward to. Adam, as we wrap up here, is there anything else on your mind or anything you'd like to mention?
Yeah, no, it's been a great interview, Tom. Thanks a lot for having me. I think it's a lot of exciting times ahead for the commodity space, and it's fun to see the commodity prices where they are. Commodities are super important, and my family's going to be in the business for a long time to come. So, you know, tons of companies, too many companies to name, but, you know, follow the group and hopefully continue to do what my you know, father and grandfather did above me, and create great shareholder returns and stakeholder returns for everyone involved.
Excellent, Adam. And of course, we can find you on Twitter at AdamLundeen5 and of course the Lundeen or LundeenGroup.com. Adam, thanks so much for your time today.
Perfect. Thanks, Tom.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.